Welcome to Pardes Daily, where you get your daily dose of Torah with Pardes faculty. This week, Pardes is bringing Tu Bishvat to you. Let's dive in.
It's Mish Hamer Kasoy from Pardes in Jerusalem, on day two of the Tu Bishvat daily challenge on Baal Tashchit. Yesterday, we learned about the mitzvah of Baal Tashchit as it appears in Deuteronomy 20, studying it both focusing on the phrase Ki ha'adam etz ha'sadeh, both according to Rashi, who read it as a rhetorical question, to answer which is no. Are trees of the field human to withdraw before you? They are innocent. You can't hurt them. As opposed to Ibn Ezra, who said Ki ha'adam etz ha'sadeh is a nominal sentence. The human is the tree of the field. If you destroy the tree, it's as if you've destroyed the human. Preserve the trees, because doing so is of ultimate benefit to humankind. I want to focus today on a broader reading of the verses which themselves, on the one hand, differentiate between fruit trees and non-fruit-bearing trees, and on the other hand, in several places, say not to destroy trees generally without specifying fruit trees, thus sort of blurring the binary, if you will, between fruit-bearing trees and non-fruit-bearing trees. Let me read the verses for you again so that you could hear that. When in your war against a city, you have to besiege it a long time in order to capture it, you must not destroy its trees, wielding the axe against them. You may eat of them, but you must not cut them down. Are the trees of the field human to withdraw before you into the besieged city? And only now does the verse in the second verse mention the fruit-bearing trees. Only trees that you know do not yield food may be destroyed. You may cut them down for constructing siege works against the city that is waging war for you until it has been reduced. What I'd like to suggest is that the Gemara picks up both on the ideology of the Ibn Ezra, that the trees are there to serve us. Destroying the trees is as if destroying human beings. And also this lack of binary between the fruit-bearing and non-fruit-bearing trees, which sort of say in both situations, both of these things indicate that if trees serve humans better when they're cut down, then they can be cut down. And the Gemara in Bava Kamma 91b, Sadi Aleph Amud Bet, offers three places in which the tree, even the fruit-bearing tree, can be cut down, because its utility is compromised. Amar Rav, Dikla de Ta'ankava Asorlim Tzatze. Rav says that a date palm that bears even one kav, that's 1.4 to 2.4 liters of fruit, cannot be cut down. Now, mind you that your average modern date tree can produce anywhere between 130 and 175 pounds of fruit a year. So we're talking about relatively nothing. Gemara asks an objection about this. How much does an olive tree have to produce before it can't be cut down? Rova. The answer is a quarter of a kav. That is to say, one quarter of what it said with respect to the date palm. The Gemara resolves the apparent contradiction. Again, for your reference, the olive tree, the average olive tree nowadays can produce anywhere between 150 to 200 pounds of fruit a year. Sometimes even more remarkably can produce 50 to 200 pounds of olives, with an exceptional tree producing 1,800 pounds of olives. So it produces less than a date tree. It often produces less and sometimes produces just as much. The apparent contradiction, however, in the Gemara between these two sources is not resolved by saying they're different kinds of trees, but rather saying Shani Zeitim de Hashibi. The reason why olive trees can't be cut down even for such a small amount is because of the special import that olive oil has in the land of Israel. So reason one, on the one hand, the Gemara seems to be saying that you can't cut down trees, even if they bear even a small amount of fruit. What also becomes clear is the inverse, that if it bears only a very small amount of fruit, it can be cut down. Amar Rabbi Hanina, Lo shachiv shivchat bari ela dekatzteina tabalozmana. Rabbi Hanina says, but be careful with this because my son Shivchat died because he cut down a fig tree before its time. So that's reason number one. You can cut down a tree because a fruit-bearing tree does not bear enough fruit to make it worth it. Reason number two, Amar Ravina, im hayamu labdamim mutar. Ravina says that if the tree is worth more dead than alive as wood, then as fruit, that it's permitted to cut it down. Tanya Nami Hachi, we have a brayta that says the same thing. Rak eitz asher teda zeilan ma'achal, ki lo eitz ma'achal hu zeilan srak. Ki be'acharsha sofolir bo kol devar, ma'tamud lomer, ki lo eitz ma'achal, lakdim srak l'ma'achal. Yechol afilu me'ula b'damim, tamud lomer rak. Let me read the translation of this brayta, or translate this brayta for you. Only a tree that you know, that means that you can cut down an ilan fruit tree. Ki lo eitz ma'achalhu, that's that you can cut down a non-fruit-bearing tree. And then the Gemara says, if you knew that eventually you were going to be able to cut down a fruit tree as well as a non-fruit-bearing tree, why did it say? To tell you that it's preferable to cut down the non-fruit-bearing tree to the fruit-bearing tree. Is it possible that you can't even cut down the fruit-bearing tree first if it is worth more money? Talmud Lomar Rak. No, only if that's the case. So what we see here in this second discussion is that it all comes down to money. You can cut down trees. You can cut down either the fruit trees or the non-fruit-bearing trees. It's better to cut down the non-fruit-bearing trees, unless, of course, the wood of the fruit-bearing tree, such as cherry wood, is more valuable than the non-fruit-bearing trees, in which case you can cut that down first. So it turns out the second clause, you're allowed to cut down fruit-bearing trees as long as it's really worth it financially. Third case, Shmuel field laborer brought him some dates. And as Shmuel is eating these delicious dates, he says, oh my gosh, they have a little bit of a taste of wine. The laborer says, well, that's because the date trees are placed between the vines. Says Shmuel, oh my gosh, I had no idea that the dates were slurping up so much flavor from the grapes. I want you to cut down the tree tomorrow to prove to me that you're preserving the grapes, which are much more important than the dates. So here it seems you can choose to cut down the date palms because they are weakening the grapes. So we've got here three reasons. All of them are really about finances, that it makes sense to be able to cut down fruit trees if they're not serving you properly. And you see the Ibn Ezra's work. Ki ha'adam eitz ha'sadeh, the person is the tree of the field. And if the tree of the field is not working for you, then cut it down. It turns out that it can only make sense to preserve the fruit tree, according to this Gemara, if it's beneficial to you financially. I take this to be as a really extreme version of Ibn Ezra's ideology, and it manifests itself in the halakha. I'm going to read to you from the Sefer HaChinuch, just in English. From the laws of the commandment, in which they, may their blessed memory, said that the Torah only forbade cutting trees when he cuts it down destructively. But it's certainly permitted to cut down the fruit-bearing trees if the person finds a beneficial manner in it, such as the value of the wood become value and he wants to sell it, or to remove injury by cutting him, such as if it was damaging other trees better than it, or because it was damaging other fields. In all of these angles and all that is similar to it, it's permissible to cut down the fruit trees. And they, may their memory be a blessing, said that it's permitted to cut down any non-fruit-bearing tree, even when it does not need the wood, as any fruit tree that is very old, to the point that it only gives a little bit of fruit, for the sake of which it's not worth the trouble. And they, may their memory be blessed, said with an olive tree, it is permitted to cut anything that makes less than a fourth of a kav, and with a palm tree, anything that's less than a kav. Gemara has hints of other metrics besides for utilitarianism, the small yield that it requires in order to be able to cut down a tree, the fact that Shivchit died, the fact that the olive tree is so important, and yet the halakha comes down on the side of, as long as you're not doing wanton destruction, you're allowed to cut down the tree. This is the position of the Rashbam and the Ramban, who suggests that as long as you're not wantonly destroying, it's considered appropriate to cut down the tree. The tree is there for the benefit of the human beings. So on the one hand, this seems to be an extreme version of the Ibn Ezra. You use the tree, you can exploit the tree as an economic resource for your benefit. Nevertheless, when you take it seriously, I think that the Gemara does teach us an important environmental lesson, and that is that you have to look at the cost-benefit analysis of the tree. The tree is not just the value of the fruit, but also the lost opportunity costs, the offloaded costs. Environmentalists call this the triple bottom line, full cost accounting. And many times we do not consider the full costs when we decide decisions about our environment and decisions about our consumption. How much carbon will be created by burning the tree? How much heat will be created by darkening the planet? You can use paper plates, absolutely. But when you decide whether you want to use paper plates or not, you have to take into consideration, says the halakha, says this Gemara, not just the cost of the paper plates, but also the cost of disposing of the paper plates, and also the cost of the environmental cost of creating the paper plates, as well as the human costs in creating those paper plates. That is what environmentalists call full cost accounting, or the triple bottom line. This is true about paper products, but it's also true, especially true about fashion. And I think that we have so much to learn from considering this full cost accounting. So we've learned today, to summarize, an important Gemara, which shows, adopts the position of the Ibn Ezra, that trees are there as an opportunity for us to utilize, and that we can cut down even fruit-bearing trees when it's to our economic benefit, and thus greatly contracting the scope of this mitzvah of Bal Tashchit to make it very narrow in its scope. We're going to look tomorrow in episode 3, stay tuned, for the tremendous ways in which the rabbis also expand this mitzvah in unfathomable ways that do not seem to flow directly from the verses. So stay tuned for tomorrow. It may not be what you think. But in the meantime, I'd like to end the day with a tribute to the Ilan Srak, the non-fruit-bearing tree. While the Torah seems to give it lower priority, we've come to understand in the year 2020 just how much even an Ilan Srak, a non-fruit-bearing tree, is constantly giving us so much benefit environmentally, and in terms of the quality of our life, in terms of the shade and the oxygen and the carbon footprint. So all of that was not known in the time of the Talmud, but we can appreciate it now. With that in mind, I'd like to end with a clip from the great song, the great singer Naomi Shemer, of Horshat Eucalyptus, the eucalyptus forest, and the wonderfulness of the non-fruit-bearing tree. Thank you for listening, and thank you to our partners at Chazon, a Jewish lab for sustainability. To learn more about our partnership and to get support in reducing waste, visit www.pardes.org.il/pardesdaily. Until tomorrow, enjoy this song.
אז אבא על גבעה בנה לבית חלפו האביבים חצי מעברה את הלטלים הפכו סביבה בינתיים אבל על חוף ירדן כמו מאומה לא קרה אותה הדומיה וגם אותה התפורה חורשת האקליפטוס הגשר הסירה וריח המלוח על המים חורשת האקליפטוס הגשר הסירה וריח המלוח
רעמו התותחים והשלום חזר בסוף הקיץ. וכל התינוקות היו לאנשים ושוב על הגבעה הקימו בית. אבל על חוף ירדן כמו מאומה לא קרה אותה הדומיה וגם אותה התפורה. חורשת האקליפטוס, הגשר הסירה, וריח המלוח על המים. חורשת האקליפטוס, הגשר הסירה,